Good morning. Welcome to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week we're going to talk about NODA, or the No One Dies Alone program. My guests are Laura Laddick, who is the volunteer coordinator at Columbia Memorial Hospital, also in charge of hospice and the hospice volunteers and the No One Dies Alone volunteers. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Anne. Thanks for inviting me today.
Yes, and I have a NODA and a hospice volunteer, Don Young, here. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Anne.
And okay, so let's talk about what does it mean, No One Dies Alone? What is that?
Well, the program actually started in Sacred Heart Hospital in Eugene. And what the people realized there is sometimes folks would come in the hospital without any family or friends to support them, and they ended up actually dying alone in the hospital. And a woman there, Sandra Clark, did some research and found that in France they had some programs where they had volunteers come into the hospital and hold vigil with the patients. And she decided that she would try to develop a program in Sacred Heart. It took her 8 years to convince people and develop the program. But since then, the program that Sandra Clark developed has gone nationwide. So we have programs throughout hospitals from New York to Oregon. Sometimes they're called doulas for the dying. You'll hear that term now. Or soul midwives throughout our country. And the sole purpose is to make sure that folks have compassionate and comfort care while they're dying in the hospital so that they have someone with them to go through their final journey.
What do you know what the resistance was for 8 years to set up such a thing? It seems like, duh, why wouldn't you want that?
Well, it was very interesting. I think that I know one of her colleagues, Carlene, and Carlene told me that folks really, it was kind of a question of money, first of all. Who are we going to pay to hold these long vigils? Because NODA vigils, like the one that we do, are very often 24-hour-a-day vigils. So if you were paying someone to sit, that would be a lot of money. Then they got the great idea to have the employees at the hospital be volunteers. And then the program was able to fly.
Okay, wait. So you mean employees are volunteering?
Yes.
They don't work enough?
I know. Well, these are people who have very compassionate hearts. And in fact, our program at Columbia Memorial Hospital, probably a quarter of our volunteers are actually employees at the hospital as well. They work in all different departments.
So what draws people to, Don, talk about why, what draws people to do this? It's got to be very draining.
It's a very spiritual, it's a human connection that I can't describe. It's being there for somebody that really needs you. And when people are dying, they're afraid. They really are. There's a lot of fear. So just by being there with them and going through the process is very helpful and relaxing and safe for them.
Uh-huh. And so, okay, so a person, but it sounds like it would be a rotating, people would take shifts?
Yes.
Okay, like how long would a shift be?
Well, it can vary. We actually had one vigil. This was a out of the ordinary, where we had a gal there for 9 days. So as you can imagine, we do 24-hour-a-day vigils. So we were getting pretty tired by the end. But at that vigil, we took big chunks. Like sometimes we would be there over 6 hours. But generally, folks go from 2 to 4 hours at a time. Mm-hmm. And we're such a team that I start the vigil and do the calls, and we set up a schedule day by day, mm-hmm, because we don't know how long the vigil is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you're there, what do you do?
Well, you generally, the room, you try to make the room peaceful and quiet. And sometimes in a hospital, it can be noisy out in the hallway. So generally you close the door, play soft music, and you just really are there. You're just a presence. You're watching for signs of discomfort, that maybe they need some pain medication, that they're cold, they're hot, or, you know, something's bothering them. They're not comfortable, their position or whatever. So we're the eyes and ears.
Okay, so it sounds to me like at this point most people aren't talking.
It depends. When they are first, because a dying does not take a few hours. It can take several days. So generally in the beginning, they are conscious to some degree and speaking. Towards the end, they are not. They're usually unresponsive.
Mm-hmm. But they hear.
Yes, they definitely hear.
Uh-huh. So do you notice bring in okay, let's see, what would it be? some kind of a CD player?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
It's called the Nota Bag.
Nota Bag. Oh,
the Nota Bag.
Okay, yeah. What's in the Nota Bag?
Nota Bag has wonderful CDs, all types of music. It has psalms and books to read, short, beautiful stories. We have a special little light that we put on that casts a beautiful light in the room, a golden light. And so we do everything to make it as peaceful and safe and loving environment as we can. No candles in a hospital.
Well, the other thing that we do is each vigil is so different because each person is different. Mm-hmm. And if we can find out a few things about the person, for example, one vigil, we played country western music. Because the person loved country western music and actually read some country western stories.
Uh-huh.
And if we can find out some information about their spirituality, then we tailor. We have had Buddhist folks, and we have one of our team members is a Buddhist chaplain come in. We have our pastor at the hospital. It just depends on what that individual and what works for them. And it's very interesting because what works for one person will not work for another.
Okay, so why don't these people go home? Most people say they would prefer to die at home. But obviously, lots of people are not dying at home.
Well, it depends what the home environment is. It could be that there's nobody to care for them at home.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they've come to the hospital.
Uh-huh.
Or they're too fragile to move, too. Some folks, when they're dying, if a move is a tremendous energy outlay, and they just couldn't make it.
Uh-huh.
To even go home or even go back if they were living in a long-term care facility. They wouldn't even be able to make it back. So we just let them die peacefully.
Oh, so they might be in an assisted living facility, but they just, they just,
right.
So they're still not in, like you think, well, just go home, but maybe home isn't really home either.
No, no.
And what about, can they have notice even if they have family?
Yes.
Yeah, this is we're an unusual group because many NOTA programs, as soon as a family member or a friend shows up, the vigil's over. But we don't do that. And I understand why they do that. That sounds kind of cold.
Yeah.
But it gets a little confusing, and there's a lot of family needs mixed in. And our job is really to be present with the patient. But we've decided that as a team, that we want to support the family members. In the last vigil that we had last week, the family member had only a daughter that was helping her at the hospital. So we wanted to support that daughter because she'd been there 3 or 4 days.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
And so we came in, and what we did is we came at 8 o'clock at night and stayed till 8 o'clock in the morning so she could go home, get sleep, let out the dogs, get refreshed, and come back to really be present with her family member.
That's great. Yeah, you'd think that. That happens with hospice too. You're home with your family member, and you like can't wait till someone's going to show up and give you a break.
Right.
Absolutely.
If your presence would prevent them from coming, that would sort of defeat the whole purpose.
Yes.
So it should be no different in the hospital, it seems to me, because if you don't support the family, right? That everyone's affected, not just the patient.
Oh, absolutely. The other support that we're finding that we give is we really support our wonderful medical staff. It's and the social workers, they support us through the work, but we also support them, having another presence there, another set of eyes, you know, a gentle friend to be there. Mm-hmm. It really helps the staff too. And the last vigil that we had, it was just beautiful because the staff came in the room and we just kind of surrounded the person. Mm. I happened to be there when the person passed, and we just surrounded the person. And it was such a beautiful, loving moment. Mm-hmm. So it really helped staff too.
That's great. Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. If you have a question about this program, how to be involved, or anything else, you can give us a call at 503-325-0010. You're listening to Your Health on Coast Community Radio, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Your Health. I'm with Laura Laddick, the volunteer coordinator at Columbia Memorial Hospital, and Don Young, a hospice and NOTA volunteer. So I want to have you differentiate how is hospice different from No One Dies Alone?
Well, I can answer that question, having done both.
Okay.
As a hospice volunteer, generally a patient who is on hospice has up, you know, generally a 6 months life expectancy. And you get to really befriend that person. If you're their volunteer, you get to know them very well and have all kinds of discussions and get to know the family. With NOTA, you know none of that. They're actively dying, which means in most cases, 72 hours or less.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't that chance to have that relationship that you would with a hospice person. Mm-hmm. So it's you're using your instinct to support that person in a safe and loving environment, and that's the message that I'm trying to give them, is that they're safe and they're loved. And everything's okay,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay to go.
For us, one of the most important roles that we play as that we don't play, but who we are as a NOTA volunteer, is to help people to feel not only, like Dawn says, not only safe and to be with someone, but the other thing is that people fear. The most is being in pain as they're dying. So as a NOTA volunteer, it's amazing how intense you get, because you're looking for any sign. And a sign can be something as simple as a wrinkled brow, a tiny movement of an arm for someone who's just been sitting very still, or even softly moaning, or a change in breathing patterns. So we are like the guardians who watch over that pain level, because that's what we all want. We want people to be as pain-free as possible mm-hmm. and as the patient wants to be. So we really play a critical role. So we can call the nurses in to say, oh, I can hear that the breathing has changed and they need a little medicine. There's a medicine that the nurses put under the tongue that can really help that breathing. Or we can see that there's pain by just the facial expression mm-hmm. and or movement with arms, a little agitation. It might be very subtle. And then they will come in and they can work with the doctor to increase the pain medication if that's necessary. Mm-hmm. So that's really an important part of the role that we play.
What about the role of touch?
Oh, that's such a... compassionate touch is probably one of the greatest gifts that we give our patients. And it's interesting because not only do different patients have different levels of what they're comfortable with touch, so do volunteers. So some volunteers do a minimum of touch. They just might lay their hand lightly on the patient's hand or just on the bed beside them. And what we've learned is that some patients don't like to be touched. And even when they're not conscious, you get the message. It's fascinating. Uh-huh. I like to lay my arm along the patient's arm from elbow to hand. And I just kind of get close as I can to the patient, and I put my arm on their arm. Or I might stroke their brow, or something like that. We also often, if it's appropriate, and we know that the patient would like to have that, if we have a little information, we'll perform Reiki, which is a form of energy movement. And so I might put my hand on the patient's chest or on their forehead. On their head, mm-hmm. and we found that really can be very calming and help with pain. We use aromatherapy, so we have a lot of different things that we use and we try. But the patient gives us a very clear signals, wouldn't you say, Dawn?
Yes, I would. Some of them do actually reach out to hold, like mm-hmm. they
to
put
hold
their
hand
out, mm-hmm. and. One of the things that I've done that I've learned from Pastor Larry at the hospital is sometimes you do not want to hold patients' hands down because you're really encouraging them to go. So to keep the human connection, you slide your hand under theirs. So there's that touch,
mm-hmm.
but
palm
you're not
to palm.
Keeping them uh-huh. held down uh-huh. to the earth. And that, I find, is wonderfully helpful and wow. very meaningful.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we really struggle with and we're really aware of, too, is emotional distress for our patients. And you can really feel that the way that people are feeling by just being present in the room. And it may sound kind of odd, but we spend a lot of time, first of all, studying and then practicing being present. And it sounds like it would be so easy. Well, what do? You just go in the room. Well, it's interesting. It's really hard to be present. And
well, I think it's easy to be present for very short periods of time.
Right.
Because anyone who's tried to meditate knows within a few seconds, your mind wanders. So being present for a sustained period of time is almost impossible.
It is very, very difficult. But what I found is it's probably one of the greatest gifts that we get. We get so many gifts from this work. But one of the greatest gifts, I think, is that the way as a volunteer, the way we feel when we're truly being present with another person. And it is one of the most peaceful, comforting feelings, not only for the patient, but for us as volunteers.
So what does that feel like, Dawn, when you're present with the patient?
Well, to me, it's I can't explain it. It's a very spiritual, it's a connection, a human connection to another human being. And there's no words to describe it for mm-hmm. me. It's just dying is not easy. It takes a lot of, it's not just a physical thing. It's emotional, it's spiritual. And, I think people need a loving presence that reassures them that you're there and they're okay.
Okay, so let's say that most of us are not great at being present. Is it a skill you can develop?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good. There's hope.
You develop. Yes, for me, I have to. I do meditate, and I'm a poor example, but I'm working on it. But I do find that if I just calm myself first before I go into the room, that I can slip into being present much more easily than when I first started the work. And what's interesting is it is a journey. It's not kind of like you just sit there and it's kind of a flat plane. We call it the labor of dying. Just as people labor into life through birth, people labor through to their death. And it is amazing because I always say when people are kind of lingering and hanging on, they're working hard. They've got work to do. Mm-hmm. And to be there for that journey is a very strong teacher. It teaches you very much, it teaches you a lot about life, actually, and about being present.
Uh-huh.
Because it isn't like kind of a static thing. It's a labor.
Okay, so how do you know if someone like would benefit from some music or some reading or just talking? How do you sort that out?
You just anticipate what's going on. If they're resting peacefully, I try not to disturb them. But if they're, moving around a little bit, then I think sometimes the music is nice. Because generally, when I'm doing NOTA, I'm there in the middle of the night. So it's like the 12 to 4 shift or, so it's really the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And so I find, trying to keep their room as quiet as possible because there's a lot of walking back and forth and nurses up and down the hall. So I just try to keep it soft and peaceful with a gentle light. And I, every once in a while, I'll maybe try something different. I'll read for a while or just talk to them and maybe rub their head and just, just be there, just to let them know I'm still there.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. I know that some really old people, but not all people who are dying are really old, have very thin skin, and too much touch hurts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a, it's just so, they're so fragile.
Right.
The skin is actually fragile.
Right.
It is.
Do you find that might be an issue with people that are dying? That it might actually hurt to stroke them too much?
I would think, yes, possibly. But I think that's why I just slide my hand under theirs. I don't do a lot of rubbing. Occasionally I'll do their head just to say, everything's okay. And I'm still here with you. And I wouldn't be doing foot massages or anything.
What I've noticed is that you really know if someone does not like to be touched. It's obvious, and I've had that happen to me before, and it kind of startled me the first time, but you can tell. People often just kind of pull away, and you can tell. Sometimes it does hurt to touch people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it depends what their condition is, and we had a fella that, I touched his leg, and it was just like,
burned him,
something. So I called in our massage therapist, Diane Blossom, and it was really fascinating because she sort of knew what was going on with his leg. She could tell by the way they looked, and she did a little repositioning and then some very light massage on a certain part of his leg, and he calmed down. But that's why I say every single patient is so different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really learning to communicate on an entirely different level. Learning to communicate without speaking. And it's powerful.
Wow. Okay, so if people listening have an interest in learning how to do this and volunteering to do this, how do they do that?
Well, the first step is to go online, and you can go to just Columbia Memorial, one word, columbiamemorial.org, and you will find Columbia Memorial Hospital's homepage, and it has a volunteer application on the homepage, and you can just apply in through that portal. Then the next thing that will happen is you'll go to an orientation with me. You'll have an interview with me, and then you have to complete a criminal background check and a drug screen. And then we will have a hospital orientation, which just lasts about an hour and a half. And then you'll be trained by the hospice team. And the next hospital orientation is actually April 16th. So if you're interested, you can go online, or you can call Columbia Memorial Hospital. And that number is 503-325-4321. And ask for me, Laura Laddick, and I will get right back to you, and I can answer any questions you might have and get you started.
Now, everyone who's listening to this is not in reach of Columbia Memorial Hospital. We have people on the Long Beach Peninsula and east of there, and also south, that would be in the Seaside Hospital range. They don't have these programs, correct?
No, we've not heard of any programs. Just like we have the only hospice on the North Coast, I believe for hospitals, we have the only No One Dies Alone program to this extent, that we have a formal program.
Okay. So, but someone could start one.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if anybody would like to start one, they could contact me through the hospital. I would be very happy to help. I said our program, I just Googled online. I didn't even know about NODA. I had no idea, and found the Sacred Heart program, and they were just very generous in helping us get our program started.
Well, you'd think anyone that's interested in this subject and this field is going to want to share it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, the more the merrier.
We would be very happy to help.
Uh-huh. So that's great. So now hospice also operates out of the hospital, in the home.
Right.
Or mostly.
Well, yes, people in the hospital, unless they're in respite, are not on hospice. You get on the hospice after you would go to your home or to a long-term care facility or wherever you're living. So our wonderful hospice team actually goes out into people's homes.
Right.
And into long-term care facilities. And that's where the nurses actually work with patients, and our social worker and our chaplain, and our volunteers. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hospice program is wonderful. There's generally more family involved.
Yes.
Because.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, like NODA, hospice is there to support families too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful, because the very best thing we can do besides taking care of the patient is to take care of the caregivers, because they have a lot going on in their lives, and it's a pleasure to work with the families and friends of our patients as well.
So if people are interested in hospice as opposed to NODA, how would they go through the same steps?
They could give a call to the hospice office. It's a little bit different because the hospice training happens once a year for volunteers, and it happens in October or November, and it's an extensive training. It's about a 22-hour training, so it's a little bit more intensive than the NODA training, and you can contact the hospice office at 503-338-6230, and again, you can ask for me, for Laura. And I will answer any questions you might have, and get you hooked up for the training in October or November.
Uh-huh. So between now and then, you can't become a new hospice volunteer?
No. Because of the extensive training.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've been through the training.
That's right.
Yes, it's a wonderful training.
Yes,
it's a really
it is.
Good learning. All right. Well, any final thoughts?
Yeah. I just think it's a wonderful program, and I think it's it's end of life, but it's very meaningful for the volunteer, and I believe for the patient.
Well, I've had people where everyone leaves to go to lunch, and then the patient dies, and you think, did they do that to spare to spare the family, or
yes.
Generally, yes.
Was it just a mistake?
Well, that's the thing. One of the biggest lessons I had to learn when I started the No One Dies Alone program is one of our social workers very quietly said to me, "You know, Laura, sometimes people want to die alone.
Uh-huh.
So I've learned that as well.
Oh, interesting.
And families will stay days, and then they'll leave literally to take a little coffee break, and the family member dies. And that uh-huh. is what we know is that's part of the process. That's uh-huh. what they needed.
That's what they needed. Wow. And maybe they just needed to see the family.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Well, my guests have been Laura Laddick. She is the NOTA and hospice and volunteer coordinator at Club Memorial Hospital. And Don Young, who is a hospice and NOTA volunteer. Thank you very much, both. I'm Ann Goldine.